The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
I'm Preston Lutwiler, President of the Board of Trustees, and I want to personally welcome you this morning, wherever you are on your life journey, wherever you are on your spiritual journey, whomever you love, whatever your gender identity or expression, we welcome you into our ever-expanding circle of compassion and caring. If you're visiting us today on Zoom, you'll notice in the Zoom chat a link to our virtual visitor card. This is a way for you to connect with us and us with you, so please fill it out at any time during the service. Our service today is about deception as a hound of hell. The title is inspired by the writings of Howard Thurman, a spiritual mentor to Dr. Martin Luther King. And Reverend Aidson Wright Riggins III spoke to us in January about hope for humans haunted by those hounds of hell, fear, deception, and hate. Today's message about hypocrisy and deception resonates with our second UU principle of justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, and with our fifth UU principle of a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Deception is the enemy of truth and can lead to horrible injustice and suffering. The Soul Matters theme for March is nurturing beauty. So how can a service about the hound of hell of deception relate to a theme of nurturing beauty? Well, a couple of weeks ago, you may have seen on TV or social media a clip of Ukrainian musicians playing an impromptu concert in the subway in Kharkiv, where people had sheltered from weeks of relentless bombing of their city. The war visited on them was the progeny of deceit. The musicians were responding powerfully with integrity by creating and nurturing beauty. Let me read a passage from Creative Dislocations, The Movement of Grace, by Robert McAfee Brown. Brown writes, "How can beauty and the oppressed be understood together? For the Christian, the question is, how can they possibly be understood separately? So I conclude that concern for beauty is not a moral cop-out. It leads us firmly into the midst of all that is going on in our world. Where beauty is apparent, we are to enjoy it. Where there is beauty hidden, we are to unveil it. Where there is beauty defaced, we are to restore it. And where there is no beauty at all, we are to create it." All of which places us in the arena where oppression occurs, where the oppressed congregate, and where we too are called to be. Now I will light the chalice with words from Reverend Scott Taylor. The beauty woven fine. As we celebrate life's beauty, may we never forget that we are a part of it. It is woven around us, through us, between us. We are here to notice those elegant strands, the way they call to us, the way they hold us, the way they connect us. May our time together today enable that beauty to shine. As I light the peace lamp, your response will appear on the screen. May peace be with us. Our gathering song today is We Shall Overcome, performed by Pete Seeger, a beautiful song that has inspired generations to overcome oppression, injustice, fear, hate, and deception with song.
We shall overcome, we shall overcome. shall overcome someday. Oh, deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome someday. We'll walk hand in hand, we'll walk hand in hand. That we are not afraid. And the young people taught everybody else a lesson. All the older people that had learned how to compromise and learned how to take it easy and be polite and get along and leave things as they were. The young people taught us all a lesson.
We are not afraid. We are.
Reverend Aidan Wright Riggins III has given sermons at our fellowship before, most recently in January, about hope for humans haunted by the hounds of hell, inspired by one of Howard Thurman's most important books, Jesus and the Disinherited. In this second of three messages, Reverend Wright Riggins addresses the role that hypocrisy and deception play in the lives of those living with their backs against the wall, and how integrity is the only way to burst the bonds of oppression. Reverend Wright Riggins served as director of Peace with Justice Ministries for the Southern Christian Leadership Conference of Greater Los Angeles. And while in Los Angeles, he met with Howard Thurman and studied his works shortly before Thurman's death in 1981. Reverend Wright Riggins is also mayor of Collegeville, our mailing address, and a personal friend who I know as Ace. So we are truly honored to have Reverend Ace in our pulpit again today.
Thank you, Preston, and good morning, my brothers and sisters. So wonderful to be with you again, and I thank you for this privilege of being able to share with you on this beautiful, beautiful day. And I want to congratulate you for coming out. When I walked out my door this morning, it was just so beautiful, I almost said, boy, I just want to just hang out in the backyard today. So I get it. Deception. As a hound of hell. Deception as a hound of hell. In his Sermon on the Mount, Jesus tells us regarding oaths that they should be kept simple. Matthew 5:37 simply says, all you need to say is simply yes or no. Anything else beyond this comes from the evil one. But for those who stand with their backs against the wall, this directive from Jesus is not as easy to live by as one might think. Do you recall those words, those who stand with their backs against the wall? We spoke of it the last time we were together. That phrase is from Howard Thurman's book, published in 1949, Jesus and the Disinherited. Just 100 pages in length, Jesus and the Disinherited is sort of a tract for hard times. It gives sufferers and survivors of that time a plan, a purpose, and a hope. Martin Luther King Jr. was known to carry a copy of Jesus and the Disinherited with him everywhere that he went. Blacks were not fully citizens of these yet to be United States in 1949. In fact, my parents were not legally allowed to vote at the time of Howard Thurman's writing. In fact, my father was legally a criminal in 1949 because just a few years before he had escaped from a sharecropping plantation in Kaufman County, Texas, and stole the sharecropper's truck, all because he and his family were living with their backs standing against a wall. In this book, Thurman was speaking specifically to African Americans who were being diminished, denied, and subjected to death. But over time, others have appropriated his message as well. The poor, women, gays, lesbians, and so many others have experienced the harsh contours of America's walls and sought succor and strength to enable them to live in the present with dignity and creativity. Thurman wrote that those who stand with their backs against a wall are haunted by the hounds of hell, fear, deception, and hate. And today, women in Texas and Oklahoma, no, not just women in Texas and Oklahoma, but women everywhere, are growing more fearful of no longer being able to have control or making decisions about their own bodies. Far too many LGBTQ people are living with their lives on the down low as a consequence of not being able to live substantially who they are. Oftentimes they have to deceive others and sometimes even themselves. African Americans, having spent 400 years in the valley of despair, drinking from the poisoned waters of hate, hating their oppressors and eventually hating themselves, have to live with deception. But today we wrestle with this hound, deception. And with Jesus' words, all you need to say is simply yes or no. Anything else beyond that comes from the evil one. Of the three identified responses to oppression, fear, deception, and hate, I find deception to be the most challenging one of the hounds of hell. And of all the directives of Jesus, I am most resistant to this one. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. Anything else comes from the evil one. Why would Howard Thurman identify deception as a hound of hell when deception seems so critical to so many people's survival in this country? When laughing when you don't feel happy and scratching when you don't itch is so important to so many people's survival. Some might argue that deception is in our DNA, part of our nervous reflex action, for we see it in most organisms. We think of the octopus who uses his ink sac to eject that cloud of ink so that those who would seek to make it its prey are confused and deceived so the octopus can grow free. I can recall the time when I first saw my father deceive a white man. We were taking a trip down south. We pulled into a gas station for gas, and I saw my dignified, highly educated father all of a sudden begin to stutter and shuffle and take on another persona, because he knew that his survival and the safety of his family was dependent upon his ability to deceive this man who he probably secretly saw as inferior to him as his master, or one who he had to depend on. I remember one of my best friend girls from college and how she has had to suffer for over 50 years now, because 50 years ago she had an illegal abortion in Tijuana, Mexico, because the rules then stated by white Christian men were that non-white, non-Christian black women did not have a right to control over their own bodies, and that abortion left her infertile. And she had to lie to her future husband about the reason why, living in deception. We began our program this morning by listening to the song, "Come and Go With Me to That Land." And we heard these African-American singers speaking about there's a land without tears, there's a land where freedom is. And oftentimes, they would sing those songs to the outward world, trying to convince them that they were speaking about heaven, something by and by when you die. But they were deceiving the oppressors, because what they were talking about is that land is not by and by when we die, but rather something that we're striving for and fighting for in the here and now. So the question of deception is not academic, but it has profound ethical and spiritual consequences going to the core of all human relationships. And it is particularly important for those who stand with their backs up against the wall, because it goes to the very heart of their survival. When it comes to authenticity or duplicity, people who stand with their backs up against the wall actually stand between a rock and a hard place. For survival too often requires sycophancy, and the oppressed have to fool the oppressor, and the oppressor expects, in fact, that he or she will be fooled. I marvel that Mrs. Jones, in my sixth grade class, required of all of our students that we remember and recite Paul Lawrence Dunbar's poem, We Wear the Mask. A sixth grader, I had to learn this poem. We wear the mask that grins and lies. It hides our cheeks and shades our eyes. This debt we pay to human guile, with torn and bleeding hearts we smile and mouth with myriad subtleties. Why should the world be otherwise in counting all our tears and sighs? Nay, let them only see us while we wear the mask. We smile, but, O great Christ, our cries to thee from tortured souls arise. We sing, but, O, the clay is vile beneath our feet and long the mile. But let the world dream otherwise. We wear the mask. My friends, not everybody who is laughing is happy, nor is everybody scratching, itching. The conundrum about unequal distributions of power is that people who are deprived of their civic, economic, and political and social rights are often forced to appear that they are not so deprived, forced into continuous degradation. And those who are depriving them of those civic, social, economic, and political rights are continually deceiving themselves into believing that such persons are okay or happy, or that the lies that they mouth are in fact truths. Our leaders maneuver towards fascism while declaring that we are making America great again. They proclaim pro-life and pro-gun in the very same sentence, as though they don't perceive the irony. They laud John Lewis while refusing to pass a Voting Rights Act in his name. And it is a simple fact of psychology that if a person calls a lie the truth long enough, he or she tampers dangerously with his or her own value judgments. And if that's true about an individual, how much more so is it true about a society? Thurman is right. The penalty of deception is to become a deception, with all the sense of moral discrimination vitiated. A person who lies habitually becomes a lie, and it is increasingly impossible for him or her to know when he's lying or when she is telling the truth. That is why Jesus says, let your yes be yes, let your no be no. But how is that possible when your survival, when your life is at stake? Our task as citizens of this country, and in fact our task as part of the Commonwealth of God, is it to make it safe for everyone, especially for those who stand with their backs up against a wall to let their yes be yes or their no be no. It is only when people live in an environment in which they are not required to exert extreme effort to just keep being alive that they're able to move beyond mere physical survival. And a growing number of people in this country today are focused not so much on how they stay alive, but they're actually focused on how not to be killed. Did you hear what I said? So many people today are focused not just on how to stay alive, but how not to be killed. While I've nurtured my children and my grandchildren to focus on life, I've also had to give them the talk about how not to be killed. And that is what so many of us are wondering about today, as the creeping fascism and the creeping threats to our dignity and threats to democracy are upon us. We're focused not so much on survival, or even thriving, but how not to be killed. The disinherited, those who are standing with their backs up against a wall, are increasingly made to feel that they have no stake in this social order, that they are alien to it, and that it is simply a great boon to them simply to remain alive and not be exterminated. There's a song that we sing at our church that I really love, and it's by Hezekiah Walker. Some of the verses to that song go like this. I need you, you need me. We're part of God's body. Stand with me, agree with me. We're all a part of God's body. It is God's will that every need be supplied. You are important to me. I need you to survive. You are important to me. I need you to survive. And in that closing verse, Hezekiah Walker says, I pray for you. You pray for me. I love you. I need you to survive. I won't let words from my mouth harm you. I love you. I need you to survive. And what the words of this song point to for me is that we cannot simply bestow dignity to each other. And the religious world spends so much time trying to bestow dignity to each other, as though it is ours to give, rather than understanding it is only ours to affirm. Ours is to affirm the dignity of every person, and in such a way that we're saying that we're all clothed with the garment of mutuality, and what happens to you happens to me, and what happens to me happens to you, in such a way that we need to break down the dividing walls of hostility, affirming that there is no ascendancy of a created order, but we're all equal before each other and equal before God. And when I understand that I am equal before God and we are equal with each other, we have the possibility of living in a world with honesty and truth, where my yes can be yes and my no can be no. Because I know who I am before God, and I know who you are in God. I need you to survive. Yes. There is a land where there is no more crime. And there is a land where there's freedom. But that land is not over yonder, but can be only be right now when we decide not to deceive ourselves and thinking more highly of ourselves than we ought, or deceiving ourselves into thinking that we are less than others. Because God, as they say, don't make no junk. And when we understand who we are in God, and we understand who we are with each other, we can reject being haunted by this hound of hell called deception. How I long for the day when you and I no longer need to wear the mask, where we no longer need to hold up our masculinity, or our faith, or our whiteness, or our income, or our social status as something that makes us someone, but rather when we understand that we all are children of God, and we all need each other, and we all need each other to survive, then deception will be no more, and it becomes possible to live by Jesus' words, let your yes be yes and your no be no, for anything else really comes from the evil one. Amen.
Thank you, Ace, for those inspiring words. Let us resolve today to live by our second UU principle, of justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, and our fifth principle of a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Let us resolve to rail against, fight against deception, and to build that land, that heaven on earth, which many you use believe is our obligation here on earth, to strive for that land where there is no crime, where there is freedom. We're going to have a musical meditation. Please reflect on the sermon and that call to build a new world. Facing the challenges of deception with courage, truth, and beauty. As we listen to musical meditation, hymn number 95, There Is More Love Somewhere, performed by the First Unitarian Brooklyn Choir. Now we have come to the portion in our service that we call Matters of the Heart, where we hear from those of you who may wish to speak. As you gather your thoughts, please listen to this short musical interlude by Isaac Strader, after which John Sayre will provide instructions on coming up to the microphone if you're here in the sanctuary and would like to speak, or raising your hand on Zoom to speak.
So we will bring this time of sharing to a close. We're going to play hymn number 123, Spirit of Life, in just a minute. The words and lyrics will show up on the screen for everybody.
And I'd like to close with a one-line quote from Phil Oakes that to me evokes the Soul Matters theme of nurturing beauty and also the image of the Ukrainian musicians in the Kharkiv subway. Phil Oakes wrote, "In such ugly times, the only true protest is beauty." We extinguish this chalice, but not the light of hope and beauty that we will carry with us into the world, nurture, and hold up against fear, deception, and hatred. And now our closing song will be hymn number 121, We'll Build a Land. The music is by Carolyn McDade. The original lyrics were written by Barbara Zanotti, but Mo Mack has revised a few words and added a verse, and this is a version that I like. The words will appear on the screen, so you're welcome to sing along if you would like.
Captives go free, where the oil of gladness dissolves all mourning. We'll build a promised land that can be. Come build a land where sisters and brothers, filled with the Spirit, may then create peace. For justice shall roll down like waters, and peace like an ever-flowing stream. Build a land where we bring the good tidings to all the afflicted and all those who mourn, and we'll give them garlands instead of ashes. We'll build a land where peace is born. Come build a land where sisters and brothers, filled with the Spirit, may then create peace. Where justice shall roll are first.
So Linda Weaver is going to give the announcements today, but I have one special announcement that I would like to give first. We have a new minister. Reverend Andrew Weber has given sermons at TPUF several times over the past 2 years, most recently our Easter service on April 17th. Reverend Weber grew up on the Main Line, where he and his family were members of the Main Line UU Fellowship. He has a master's in divinity degree from Pittsburgh Theological Seminary. He was the lead youth advisor for the First Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Ann Arbor in Ann Arbor, Michigan, from September 2009 to May 2012. Andrew and his wife moved to Newark, Delaware, where he was called to ministry at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Newark, and he was there from 2013 to 2017. Andrew, his wife, and their two children, whom you have met on April 17th, those of you who were here, currently live in Newark, Delaware. Andrew has been a pulpit supply and pastoral coverage minister for area Unitarian Universalist congregations since 2017, and in that capacity, he has conducted services at several congregations in our area, including here. In 2018, Andrew led a mindfulness pilgrimage to Transylvania, Romania, which he described to us in a sermon that he gave here in January of 2020. After the Easter service last month, Andrew asked if we were looking for a minister at TPUF, and he let us know that he was looking for a position as a half-time contract minister. Some follow-up phone calls, emails, and conversations followed. His resume was shared with our ministerial search committee, which was our board of trustees. The committee interviewed Andrew in person here at TPUF on Saturday, May 7th. And at the subsequent board meeting on Tuesday evening, May 10th, the board unanimously authorized extending a letter of agreement to Reverend Weber for a half-time contract minister position, which will begin August 1st. The letter of agreement was executed on May 12th, and Reverend Weber will officially be our half-time contract minister on August 1st. The worship committee had already arranged for Andrew to give the sermon at our flower communion on June 12th, and he has agreed to stay after that service and meet with anyone who would like to get to know him better. So plan on being here June 12th and meet our new minister, Andrew Weber.